This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for a pre-recorded interview with Aron Lynn from the LEND program at UIC and SIBS, supporting Illinois Brothers and Sisters. But first, disability news for the week of March 3rd, 2025. The Trump administration is planning to cut jobs and make big changes at the Social Security Administration that administers Social Security and Supplemental Security Income benefits to millions of Americans with disabilities. The agency said that it's planning to shrink its workforce to 50,000, down from 57,000 employees, and, quote, will soon implement agency-wide organizational restructuring that will include significant workforce reductions, end quote. They also stated that employees from non-mission critical positions may be reassigned to mission-critical direct service positions. Social Security has a regional structure with 10 offices, which will be reduced to 4 regions. The agency described its workforce as bloated, and officials said that much of the staff reductions will come from employees electing to leave. The change is part of a broader effort by Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency to cut the size of the federal workforce. More than 73 million Americans receive Social Security, SSI, or both each month, including over 11 million people with disabilities. Advocates say they don't see how the agency could cut thousands from its payroll without compromising services, said Darcy Milburn, Director of Social Security and Healthcare Policy at the ARC of the United States, quote, "For many people with disabilities, Social Security is the difference between making rent or being evicted, between having enough food to get through the week or going hungry, and between having enough gas in the tank to get to the doctor or missing an appointment. The SSA is already running on fumes with its lowest staffing levels in 50 years. I am deeply concerned that the scale of the proposed staffing cuts and the upheaval that is happening right now at SSA could devastate Social Security programs and put the lives of millions of Americans with disabilities at risk," end quote. Social Security has already closed its Office of Civil Rights and Equal Opportunity, which handled civil rights violations, accessibility, reasonable accommodations, and other disability services. The U.S. House of Representatives voted to approve a draft budget that could cut Medicaid by more than $800 billion. While the draft does not detail cuts, it calls for the House Committee on Energy and Commerce, which oversees Medicaid, to reduce spending by at least $880 billion over the next 10 years. Lydia Dawson is the Vice President for Government Relations at the American Network of Community Options and Resources, or ANCOR, which represents disability service providers. According to Dawson, quote, "This type of a drastic cut will almost certainly lead to significant and devastating cuts to Medicaid funding, which would negatively impact state budgets and reduce access to community-based services for people with IDD," end quote. The spending bill passed the House by a vote of 217 to 215, with no Democrats voting in favor. Republicans are approving a host of spending cuts to offset an extension of President Trump's tax cuts, but potential cuts to Medicaid are worrying even some Republicans. The Medicaid home and community-based services system, which is currently the central source of supports for people with developmental disabilities in this country, is already overloaded. More than 700,000 people are on waiting lists for services, and meanwhile, even those with waivers have struggled to get supports, many who live right here in Illinois, in fact. A national survey of nearly 500 community-based service providers found that almost all had moderate or severe staffing shortages in the previous year. 69% reported declining new clients and 39% closed programs or services. 33% said they were considering further cuts. Disability advocates are warning that the magnitude of cuts called for in the House blueprint would directly threaten home and community-based services, which are currently optional Medicaid offerings under federal law. Nicole Jorwick is Chief of Advocacy and Campaigns at Caring Across Generations, an organization advocating for caregivers and people who rely on them. She said, quote, "If cuts of this magnitude are allowed to become law, it is not hyperbole to say that the results would be catastrophic for people with disabilities, family caregivers, direct support professionals. Service providers will have to close. The workforce crisis that already exists will get exponentially worse, and waiting lists around the country will grow," end quote. And finally, for the first time ever, an astronaut with a disability has been approved for a mission to the International Space Station. John McFall, a British surgeon and former Paralympic sprinter, had his right leg amputated after a motorbike accident at age 19. In 2022, he was chosen as a member of the European Space Agency's Astronaut Reserve to take part in a study assessing the feasibility of space flight for astronauts with physical disabilities. The European Space Agency said that McFall has received medical clearance to serve as a fully integrated crew member on a six-month mission to the space station. McFall said, I feel hugely proud. That isn't about me. This is way bigger than that, because this is a cultural shift. This is something that has not been done before," end quote. According to Daniel Neuenschwander, director of human and robotic exploration at the European Space Agency, quote, "Now he is an astronaut like everybody else who wants to fly to the space station waiting for a mission assignment," end quote. And that's the news for this week. You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm thrilled to have on as guest on our program today, Aron Lim, who is involved in lots of different things, apparently, including supporting Illinois Brothers and Sisters, and also the LEND program, which is based at University of Illinois at Chicago. Welcome to the program, Aron.
Hi, Vicki. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, you're involved with so many different things. Why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself to start with?
Yes, I would love to. My name is Aron Lim. I am a nurse practitioner. I practice in developmental and behavioral pediatrics. And as you mentioned, I am a fellow in Illinois LEND this year. And through LEND, I've been able to work with FIPS, supporting Illinois Brothers and Sisters. And it's all been such a wonderful experience so far.
So which do you want to start with? You want to begin with LEND first, since that was where you started?
Yeah, let's do it. So okay. To share more about LEND, it's a wonderful program. It is an acronym. It stands for Leadership, Education in Neurodevelopmental and Related Disabilities. And the mission of LEND is to provide graduate-level interdisciplinary training with the goal of advancing the health and well-being of people with disabilities. And so this program is funded by the Autism CARES Act, and we're all really excited about the Autism CARES Act of 2024 passing the Senate last week, which will reauthorize LEND and a number of other programs for the next 5 years. And there are about 60 LEND programs across the country.
Really? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, there's a lot of them are based in universities or in hospital systems. And yeah, it's a really nice network of programs, and it's a great thing to be a part of. And so the program, every one of the LEND programs helps all of us be better prepared to be leaders in our respective fields, and it promotes collaboration between all of our disciplines. And I did want to mention the disciplines. If anyone listening is interested in being a part of LEND, if you work with patients, children, people with neurodevelopmental disabilities, or if you're a family member, a self-advocate, you can consider finding out more information about it. Some of the represented disciplines are speech therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy, speech-language pathology, special education, psychology, medicine, which includes medical students and fellow physicians in developmental and behavioral pediatrics, disability studies, graduate students, public health, social work, nursing, and like I mentioned, self-advocates and family members. And the program was highly recommended to me by the developmental behavioral pediatricians that I work with and the nurse practitioners that I work with. And we're about halfway through because it follows the academic calendar, but it's been really wonderful. I can't speak highly enough about it. And if anyone is interested in more information, the website is illinoislend.org.
And this is an in-person class that people actually attend at University of Chicago, Illinois?
Yes. So there are a number of in-person components, but the program is mostly done remotely. So we do have a lot of fellows who are in the Chicago area, but we also have fellows who are maybe students at UIUC, Urbana-Champaign, or they come from different parts of the state. And generally, the lecture portion is all remote. We have a clinical portion as well, which most of it is remote, or you can find experiences that are local. And the in-person aspects of the program were mostly in the beginning of the semester to do orientation, to be able to meet the cohort and things like that.
How frequently does the class meet? And for how
long?
Our
class, yes. Our lectures are every Thursday evening for 3 hours, and it follows the academic calendar. So we started in late August. We'll take a break for a week for Thanksgiving, and then we will have one more lecture next week, and then we will take a few weeks off for winter break. We'll resume in January and then go through late April, first week of May, I believe, is when our final projects are done. And then our clinical portions are usually Friday afternoons. Mm-hmm. And then there are other like projects and things that you can either work on during your own time. There's flexibility there and other things that you can sign up for, and you have some options in terms of times that.
I'm sure there's a lot of interest from family members and people with disabilities being a part of it, but I can see great value in medical and people who are going into the medical professions going through a program like this, because my experience with people in the medical field is they really don't know a whole lot about disability unless mm-hmm. they intentionally get that information on their own.
Yes, we talk about that a lot, and I think residents and medical students will mention this too. It's not really built into their training for most of them, like you said, unless they seek it out. So yeah, it's a great option for all of the disciplines, but I agree. I think the medical students would also agree with you that it's been a really good learning experience and something they wouldn't have been able to get through just traditional their curriculum at school.
So, Aran, how did this lead you to being involved in supporting Illinois Brothers and Sisters, or SIBS?
So, all of the fellows who are participating in LEND, we are also participating in a leadership research project. And so the project that I was lucky to be assigned to is to work with SIBS. And through SIBS, our goal and the project's objective is to increase membership of siblings who are part of the BIPOC, Black Indigenous People of Color, and or rural communities. So through the connection with LEND, I met Kara Conley, who is one of the founders and the current independent consultant who was on this program previously. It was a great interview. And for the past few months, we've been working on connecting with members of our network who we have worked with before, different organizations, schools, to kind of spread the word a little bit more to be able to, we would love to have more people benefit from all that SIBS offers. And so the SIBS mission is to support siblings of people with disabilities in Illinois. And there's all kinds of information, networking opportunities, resources, and we really just want to enhance the quality of life for the individual with a disability, but really for the entire family.
Yeah, and I think that many people don't consider that siblings do play such an important role in their family members' lives, because generally, for the most part, I would say, you know, a person with a disability is going to outlive their parents. And who is the person who's going to be ultimately responsible for them long term? It's going to be their brother or sister, or maybe, you know, an entire family. So how
That's
do you...
That's a really important point.
Yeah, and I've been had that hammered home me a few times, sometimes by my own children. But so what are the things that you do in SIBS that help prepare family members for that journey as becoming responsible, maybe even a guardian for their family member with a disability?
I think one of the most important aspects of SIBS and one of the most important supports it provides is the network of people. So it's really meant for siblings across the lifespan, young siblings, teenage siblings, adult siblings, and then older adults who are thinking more about caregiving and things like that. And so having just other people who are walking that same journey is so important. And as you mentioned, like, you also need a support system as a sibling. That's such a valuable thing. So I think that's one of the most important aspects of SIBS. And on their website as well, there's really good information, really good resources on a variety of topics. So for example, I work in pediatrics, so I see a lot of young siblings. And so there's some information on the website about how to talk to siblings about their about the child who has a disability, about their diagnosis, and just some tips for parents, some information supporting siblings in school. And then there are resources for older siblings as well, future planning and just needs across the lifespan. So there's good information on the website regarding that as well. So really, any age, we want to provide that support and service to siblings.
What does SIBS recommend for parents telling the younger siblings about their family member with a disability? What are some of the tips that you might use for that age group?
Yeah, and this is something I've encountered personally at work. And the first couple of conversations I had with parents, I think they went well, but I would have really benefited from some of the information on the website and some of the resources that they offer. And so we believe, of course, like, you want to be speaking with children in an age-appropriate, developmentally appropriate way, but really whenever the parent deems is, you know, the child is old enough to understand, probably by the age of 7 or so, the sibling will start to ask questions. They will notice that there's something about their sibling that is not the same as them. And so being open, responding to their questions, not sugarcoating things, but also explaining things in a way that they're going to be able to understand, and keeping it, you know, developmentally appropriate, like we mentioned. And then as the child gets older, you can, of course, adjust that and offer more information as the sibling matures. It may also be helpful just to think about a script that you can share with your sibling or the child who is a sibling about, let's say, a friend asks them about their sibling at school. They say, oh, like, I noticed that something is different. Like, what's going on? And just to be able to prepare them on how to speak to others about their siblings' disability. Mm-hmm. And there are some really great, like, books talking about this as well. And of course, as parents, it's really important to model all of the things that model things like advocacy and really remembering, like, yeah, your sibling, they may have a disability, but they are wonderful in so many ways. They have so many strengths. And, you know, we all need different supports in different ways. We all have challenges. And, yeah, really teaching them about advocacy from an early age, too, I think is important.
What are some of the things that siblings who don't have disabilities, but some of the people, the adults or even the youth that are members of SIBS, what are some of their biggest complaints about what their parents should have done, should have said, how they should have prepared them for responsibilities that they didn't prepare them for?
I think for the siblings that I have personally seen, I am relatively early in my practice as a clinician in the developmental and behavioral pediatrics field. But I think the few siblings that I've had visits with, I think usually the conversation is the parent will say something like, oh, I wish maybe I would have mentioned something like this sooner, or maybe I should have gotten them ready earlier. And of course, you know, that's dependent, you know, every family is different, and I try to encourage them, like, you can talk to them about it today, it's not too late. And then older siblings will say things like, you know, when the sibling with the disability, for example, becomes an adult, that is a huge change for everyone, most of all for the person with the, for the individual with the disability, but for the family too. It's just a lot of navigating sort of that care cliff that everyone experiences, unfortunately, when you become an adult, and kind of learning to navigate that and learning the dynamics of the parent is still the parent, but I am a young adult. I have opinions and I have preferences on how my sibling with a disability is cared for. And I think navigating that can be a challenge as well. That's what I've heard from family members, like learning, okay, like, we're all part of the team, and how much are we all taking on, and who's, like, who are we giving preference to in terms of input? Like, usually it's going to be the parent until, you know, they're no longer in the picture. But I think that dynamic can be challenging, understandably, for families and siblings.
Definitely. So I've had, you know, siblings come to me and say, you know, my parents, you know, died in a car crash or, you know, whatever, very suddenly. And I didn't know anything about how to manage, you know, things like social security and, you know, any kind of supports out there, the medication or anything like that. So to engage the siblings in that conversation as your family grows and develops, I think is so critically important.
Yes, agree. And as siblings, you know, we love our sibling with a disability desperately. We, they are such important people to us, and we want to be a part of that. And so, yes, early as possible, and then adjusting that involvement over time as appropriate. Very important. Agreed.
Yeah. So, Aran, you are a sibling then?
Yes? I am, yes.
Can we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to. So I do have my sibling's permission to share about this. So I have a younger sibling who has a developmental disability, and we have quite an age gap. I'm over 10 years her senior. So when our family was sort of navigating the process of her evaluation and diagnosis, I was a tween, young teen, and I was at that point, you know, Googling her symptoms, trying to figure out what this is. And I remember there being a lot of, what a lot of families hear, right, from their pediatrician or people around them. Oh, your child, you know, they're just behind right now. They'll catch up eventually. They'll learn. And thankfully, my sister did receive early intervention services, and we're so grateful for that support. And after extensive evaluation, including neuroimaging, she was eventually able to receive a diagnosis and received IEP supports to help her through the end of high school. I think school generally went well with those supports, and my mom did a great job advocating for her. And just, she's a young adult now, and she's doing pretty well. She graduated high school when she was 17. She completed a couple of years at the local community college, and now she's in the process of job searching for the first time, which is a big deal. It's, you know, it includes everything from writing a cover letter, putting together a resume for the first time. It's really intimidating. So, you know, of course, it's my joy to kind of walk with her through all of this. And it's definitely been, you know, it's been a lot to navigate for sure. And I think she is still a young adult and, you know, there's, you know, lots more in our journey to come, but sort of through all of the different stages in her life. You know, when she was young, it was mostly making sure that she was receiving therapies and support. And then as she became like a preteen, teenager, and some of this still persists now as she is a young adult, like she did develop some significant like anxiety and mood concerns. And that's something that's very common in individuals with neurodevelopmental disabilities. And, you know, she's participated in therapy. Hopefully she finds our family support helpful as well. And I think all of this, my personal experience definitely is teaching me the importance, as we discussed earlier in the program, the importance of supporting siblings through the lifespan, because the needs of the person with the disabilities, with the person with the disability, that evolves over time. And so all of our experiences are constantly changing. And so I think because SIDS is for siblings of all ages, it's so important to have that community, that, you know, group of people who can offer advice, support, who can relate to your experience, no matter where you may fall, sort of across that lifespan where your sibling may fall. I think that's one of, again, just to reiterate, I know we've talked a little bit about that, but this is just to say, like, my personal experience has further reminded me of just that importance of, supporting these experiences as they change over time.
And I, you know, we have to also recognize, I'm sure, that everyone's experience is going to be slightly different based on, you know, the person that they are supporting. And so it's not like a one size fits all kind of a model in any way. There are people within mm-hmm. that group whose experiences may be similar to what yours are, but some may be very different as well. Isn't that correct?
Yes, absolutely. And we acknowledge that. We celebrate that. And yeah, there's definitely going to be a variety of experiences indeed from the perspective of either the person with a disability or from the sibling's perspective. But yeah, we recognize all of that. And I think having all of that diversity also is important. Diversity of experiences is important.
Absolutely.
And I think, yeah.
So before we run out of time, and we're quickly doing that, can you give us contact information, website where people can get first information about the LEND program and then also the SIBS program?
Absolutely. So the LEND program, our website is www.illinoislend.org. And then our SIBS website is sibsnetwork.org.
All right. And sounds like lots of resources on both of those. And one more question for you, Aran. How is the weather in San Diego?
It's, you know, it's sunny, but it's chillier than I thought it would be. I'm still wearing a light jacket, but I'm enjoying it. It's like it's 60s compared to Chicago. It's definitely prefer.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Well, safe travels when you come home and have a great holiday. Thank you so much for joining me on the program today, Aran Lin, who is part of the LEND program and also supporting Illinois Brothers and Sisters. Thank you so much for joining me. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week.
No, I stand my ground. Won't be turned. This hour of programming is brought to you by the listeners.